piercing your firewall and filling your ports with technology goodness. It's the 1352 Report.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of the 1352 Report for Monday, November 10th, 2008. On the line is Sean Burgess.
Good evening.
Carl Tyler.
What's with the funny voice, Bruce?
And Jess Dratton.
Hello.
So it's a little, almost a week since Election Day. Did you guys survive the elections?
Well, we survived. We're here. Yeah.
Okay.
I did. I found
no, I'm still in line.
Because I'm not allowed to vote, I found anybody that was going to vote opposite to what I thought they should vote, I just kept them at work later.
Yeah, it was quite the election, and a lot of emotions flying around, not only, you know, throughout the U.S., but also on some of the blogs, right, in the Lotus community. But we won't go there.
I was amazed at how low the turnout was compared to what they were expecting.
What do you mean?
It was nowhere near as high as
That was just Alaska. That was just the Ted Stevens thing.
It was nowhere near as high as you know, all the as most of the
pollsters?
Democratic people were telling you there were going to be huge turnouts. It just didn't occur.
Yeah, whatever, Sean. I saw an interview on 60 Minutes last night with the Obama campaign team, and they used three words that I've never really heard before used in a campaign, and they were talking about social media and stuff like that, and they used Twitter, Facebook, and I forgot what the last one was.
But it was PayPal?
PayPal?
Well. PayPal?
Probably, but it wasn't PayPal. It was something else. But just think about, you know, here you have a president of a country, and their campaign management is talking about social media. So they're using it in politics, but yet we're still not using it in business, right?
They'll be having Twitter chats.
Well, in politics, there is no look for a return on investment on a social media thing. In business, you got to figure out why you're using it.
Fair point. I'm just bringing it up, Sean.
I know. I don't disagree with you. So I like to see it used a lot more.
For me, I don't see any business value in Facebook. The thing I'm getting from Facebook is it's like some big reunion club. It's like classmates.com or something, just free.
Absolutely.
I mean, all the people that are contacting me are people I used to work with 15 years ago. So I'm doing no business through Facebook. In fact, if it was for business, I would say I'd probably use LinkedIn for networking for business versus using Facebook for that.
Which is unless your business is social media.
That's true.
It's like your best friend. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you work for Facebook, then obviously Facebook makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. So a lot of things going on lately, which we'll be talking about throughout the show here, something to do with Foundation, some news that just came out today. Carl wanted to talk about something to do with the Lotus Most Valuable Professional type of program that still yet doesn't exist in the Lotus world. And Jess was doing some Nomad stuff a week or two ago, and she left me some really hot voicemail, which she'll talk about. So let's start off with probably Sean here and the news about foundations today. And
do we want to start there, or do we want to start with the abstract being pushed out?
Sean, the table got turned to you, and you could talk about anything you want.
He's almost okay. Like a politician. He you ask him a question, and he gives a sort of different subject.
Okay, so I'll talk about today was a Sean big day Palin. For the foundations group in the fact that IBM had a press release that they're putting out a new appliance based on IBM's hardware instead of the Nitix hardware that it foundations has been on recently. It's going to be based on IBM hardware. It's going to carry an IBM logo, which means it's going to have worldwide support from IBM. One of the issues has been once you got outside the U.S. and Canada, you couldn't get any support for the Nidix boxes. So foundations outside of the U.S. was being run on their own hardware, not on the appliance hardware that comes from IBM. And there's so many advantages to having the IBM hardware that this is really something that's going to be a positive if you're looking to expand outside of the U.S. borders.
What's this have to do with Lotus Session Abstracts?
You know what? Don't start with me. In addition to that, you're also was announced that a VMware beta is starting with Foundations, in that a future release of Foundations, the OS and software, is going to have support for VMware built in. That is huge for the Foundations platform, because one of the huge holes in our offering was the ability to run Windows applications. There's a lot of custom applications built out there for your dentist's office, as Caleb likes to use, or for your lawyers or for your marketing people, which are all built on a Windows platform. They could be VB, they could be Java, they could have a SQL Server on the back end, but you couldn't run those on a Foundations platform. You still had to have a Windows Server to do that. Now with the VMware support, you can package up the Windows Server. A lot of these applications have pre-built VMware images that you can download, drag it over to the Foundation Server and hit start, and it comes up with almost absolutely no configuration, which is going to be really, really nice. And the fact that it runs Windows without having – you could have Windows running, you can have Windows crash, and everything else on the network still stays up because it's a virtual image. You bring it down, bring it right back up, and everything works perfectly.
Now, this is good because, I mean, wasn't there certain products that people were a little surprised weren't included in Foundations? I can't remember if it was quicker connections or same time.
Same time is the big one. Same time is the big one, right? Both of them. Same time is the big one, I think. And I've heard rumors, unsubstantiated at this point, that there is a version of these – the Foundation Server that's going to come out with same time included.
Do you think that's why they added the support?
No, I think they absolutely added it because they were getting killed when they were going up against straight up Windows or SBS. And the fact that they couldn't run a lot of these specialized applications for small businesses. I know for a fact because I've run into it a couple times.
So basically Microsoft is still going to get their money then, because what's going to happen is people are going to run Foundations, but they're still going to run SBS inside of VMware, which means Microsoft still gets the license for SBS and things like that.
Well, they're not going to run SBS. They'll run a straight Windows Server.
Yeah, but so Microsoft's still going to get the money.
Some way. Or you can run – I don't know how licensing is going to go with that. I don't know how VMware licensing goes right now, if you pay for a full server license for a virtualized server or not.
Oh yeah, if you run Windows Workstation and you have VMware on your machine and you put in instances of Windows inside those VMs, you need a license for Windows for each of those VMs that you have on your machine.
Yeah,
which most people don't do.
I was about to say, and how many times do they actually get that money?
But legally, you are, and the same is true for things like Domino. If you're running Domino and stuff in VMs.
Oh yeah, we know about that, Sean.
Well, unless it's for testing. And if you're a business partner, it's used for testing. You do not have to have a license, but we're few and far between.
Yeah, I was reading on Jalal. Is his name Jalal, Sean?
Bilal, B-I-L-A-L, Bilal right. Jaffrey.
Right, and if you want to follow him on Twitter, he's on Twitter. What's his Twitter name, Sean?
Bilal Jaffrey.
How do you spell that?
B-I-L-A-L-J-A-F-F-E-R-Y.
Mm-hmm. And on his blog today, he had a picture of this new appliance, right? It even had little yellow
post-it notes on it.
Post-it paper on it, kind of like Mike Roden had on that little Nidix box. But some of the things it has, right? If that hard drive subsystem in that appliance goes bad, you could boot from the onboard chip, right? It even runs networking without the hard drive. And
the only thing you need the hard drives for is your data. everything else, firewall, DNS, all the other stuff is stored on the onboard chip, just like your current Nitix server. The changes are going to be, they're probably going to be beefier hardware because it's going to be the IBM stuff. And we all know IBM might suck at marketing, but they do engineering very, very well.
Mm-hmm. The other thing to consider too with the not the ESX stuff, the VMware stuff, is that it's integrated with the IDB, right? I think they call it the integrated
intelligent disk backup.
Yes, sir.
So, got to get the numbers right.
Yeah. Speaking about marketing, did you see Graham Dodge blog something today about Foundation's marketing? He didn't say Foundation's marketing sucked. What did he say?
Yeah, well, that's guaranteed. Right now, they don't. There has been very little marketing around Foundations, and I've been hitting only Bilal and my sales rep about, you know, we really need to get the stuff out there. But I think they've been waiting because they have a couple of holes that they're trying to fill, this being one of the major ones, before they go out and hit it hard.
They're kind of working out the kinks right now. Is that what you're saying before they have a moment?
That's my guess.
I think people are still a little confused as well as to what's actually out there for Foundations, because they saw this little server that came out of an envelope at Lotusphere. And then there's this other server now, which is this big server. And then there was talk at some point of those Lotus Foundations as a VMware appliance as well. So I think there's, you know, marketing needs to start happening, because I think there's change to people. There's confusion as to what actually exists for Foundations and what's futures for Foundations.
Now, on that development front, one of the things that was announced in this press release is that what they call the Smart Business Developers Toolkit is going to be released on the 20th of November. That is a toolkit, I believe it's built on the Expeditor platform, that allows you to package up Domino applications for the Foundations platform. It is very easy to use, point and click, you know, put in your servers where you're pulling them from, and it packages up everything up that you can then
maybe they'll be able to be pushed to the Notes App Store.
You know what? I'm really hoping. I know there's conversations going right now around how they're going to sell these applications. I know they've seen the App Store for iPhone and iTunes, and they know how well those have been received. And I hope that they take that into consideration when they build what they're going to build.
Yeah, Microsoft, I think, just announced plans to do something like the App Store as well. So, Sean, I had another Foundations question. I'm just trying to remember what it was.
Keep going.
It's coming to me.
You lost it.
Yeah, I lost it. Sorry.
You can put it in the show notes if you remember later.
Oh, thanks, Jess, for that show notes quote. So, Sean, you still excited about Foundations, right?
You know, I still think – I think this new software change with VMware is a big deal in the fact that it plugs a serious hole. And then now that you're going to have your Foundations hardware coming on a box with – IBM logo on it, to a lot of the value-added dealers, the value-added resellers like Ingram Micro, the bigger ones, that's basically what they need to know, to see on a box to say this is for real. Mm-hmm. And as much as we like to deride IBM, it still carries a lot of weight in the business community.
Yeah, I just had some imagery in my head go off that showed this beautiful, beautiful Foundations box in a dentist's office, and then the IBM sales guy saying, "And now where should we put this big portal server?"
Yeah. Now, the first I have the image of that box also, and the first thing that came to mind when I saw it was the Domino for AS400 box that came out.
Yeah,
back in the late 90s. It was with the big yellow panel on it that we thought was also cool.
Woo.
Maybe that's why they've done the deal with VM, so they can actually run Portal inside the VM.
You know what? You probably could very easily. The big thing is going to be allowing the boxes to get significantly beefier than they do now. When you run VM, you're going to need so much more RAM, and the way we're able to configure them as far as business partners are concerned, there's only so much that they're allowing us to buy at that time. You can always go out aftermarket and purchase your own RAM, but it's much easier that if you know you're going to be virtualizing four servers that are currently in existence in a client's, that you can add all the RAM and have it tested and everything right there before it comes to you.
I think doing the VM thing is actually a great move. It's really good. I just hope that they don't start making this box so big that they again make themselves unavailable to the micro small business of less than 10 people and things.
Well, one of
it's like, you know, the AS400, they always target that small business, but you go look at where that's actually in use and it isn't that micro small business. It's in the, you know, 50, 75, 100 employee businesses.
I did remember my question.
Yes.
Didn't they make the Lotus Foundation Start software available as a free trial?
Absolutely. For 30-day free trial, you can download it, install it, any hardware you've got. You can even install it as a VMware instance, although they really don't support that. It works perfectly fine.
But you're not going to get the stuff that the appliance has.
Correct. You're not going to have the on-disk backup, the on-disk recovery, so that on-chip recovery, so that you can bring the server up without having any disk running. You're not going to have the IDB, but you will have everything else that's within the Foundation server, and you'll be able to see what the interface is like. They also have a new site out, and I'll make sure I give you the link to put into the show notes, where they can see the Lotus Foundation's demo room, where they can actually see what a Foundation's interface looks like without having to do anything other than go to the site.
Yeah, if anyone from the Foundation's team is listening and they want to enlist us as a marketing arm for your product, we're available for a price. So
we're always available for a price.
So Jess, you've been busy lately doing some what with Nomad?
Yeah, and even though the technology, you know, it's only what, 2 years old. Yeah, and finally, you know, I never really had a reason to use it until when I was contracting, and it just so happened that somebody came down and asked if it was possible to put notes on a USB drive because he was traveling overseas and he needed to show the client a couple of databases, and he didn't want to bring his laptop with him.
I have it on voicemail.
He does. I don't know how it happens. This is the second time that I have called Bruce accidentally and left him through Skype. I called him, left him a voicemail, didn't even know my laptop had a mic. Apparently it does, during the whole conversation. And the real irony is that this is not the first time. At Lotusphere a couple of years ago, I had pressed the button. This is when the old Nextels used to have that button on top of the phone where if you press the button, it would automatically redial the last person you called. And we were walking around the parks with Bruce, and I put my phone in my pocket during the ride. We were going on Dueling Dragons at Islands of Adventure. And then right when we were getting into the ride, Bruce is like, "Who's calling me?" And he puts the call into voicemail. And then we get off the phone, we get off the ride, and he wants to see who called him. And he's like, "Jess Stratton." And I'm standing right beside him. I'm like, pick up my phone. It says, "Connected to Bruce Elgort." I'm like, "What?" And so Bruce recorded the whole ride. I did it again. I have no idea what cosmic thing it is that I keep calling and going into Bruce's voicemail. But
yeah, but here I am. I logged in. I got home from work. And I got the Skype voicemail message, and I'm listening to it, and it's like, it's Jess, and she's talking to someone about running notes, Lotus Notes, on a stick, and how they have something called Nomad, and this guy's going to Europe, and it was just the weirdest thing. So I'll let you continue.
But anyway, it's like I said, the technology's only been around for 2 years, so it's been around for plenty of time, but I just never had a reason to try it. And so I actually had to go digging to see how to do it. And I found a great blog entry by Chris Wiesenit. And I actually put a little write-up and a link on the lotususergroup.org group blog. So if you do want to see his great step-by-step instructions, just follow that link there. So I'm not going to tell you, you know, everything I had to do. But it was really, really cool. When it was all said and done, it was installed on the USB drive. At this point, you know, we have an 8 gig drive, so it wasn't like storage space was a problem. So I was able to take local copies of the databases that he wanted to demo, and we put them on the drive and, you know, got the client all configured. And so what happens is you put the drive in a computer, and it installs notes. It just runs through an install. It takes about 2 minutes. You can see a progress bar, and an icon appears on the desktop, and it auto-launches itself. And so it auto-launches, and it asks for the password, and he's in, just like it's in island mode. You know, and you have your encrypted copies of your local databases you can use as normal. And then when you're done, you just put, you know, go down to the system tray and stop the device, pull it out, and it takes 20 seconds and it uninstalls itself and the icon disappears from the desktop and you're good to go. And to me, as a consultant or even as somebody who is a salesperson, I thought that was just incredible. I'd never really thought to do that before. You know, if any notes person is applying for a job and you want to demo your work, you don't really have to worry about, you know, doing a presentation of your screenshots anymore, and you don't have to worry about lugging around a laptop. It's like, just put all your work on this USB drive and you can actually do a live demo while you're there, and the system will clean up after itself right when you remove the drive. You know, this is also great for salespeople doing sales calls for their Lotus Notes products. I mean, it just kind of hit me that there was a lot more uses than just convenience.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you can run a VM off a USB drive and just plug it into somebody's machine, that's going to be the like nirvana for most people. You know, you get everything, your desktop, the whole lot.
You think that's coming, Carl?
People are working on it.
You need a lot of space though, right?
Yeah, but if I mean, I bought a 16 gig USB thumb drive the other day for $25. I mean, think about that. That's an amazing amount of space, and think what how many apps you can get on there and your OS and everything.
I'm surprised we don't have that yet.
There's people out there that are working on it. I believe VMware are working on it. I'm sure Microsoft's probably working on it, where they'll put something in the core OS that'll allow it to support it or something. You know.
Mm-hmm. Carl, you're not drifting off on us here, are you?
No, why?
Because you sound like you guys.
No.
All right, so anything else, Lois?
No, PETA. No, see, the moment's gone. It only works once.
Well, what you didn't hear was before the rest of you came on the call, Bruce was actually doing the whole Family Guy entourage. He did Lois, he did Stewie. Come on, give us it again, Bruce.
No. Matt and I are going to be doing a little skit, and I can't give it away. So.
Oh, this would spoil it, would it?
Yes, but you have to figure out, is Bruce Stewie, or is Bruce Brian, or is Matt Brian, or is Matt Stewie?
And now where will this skit be done?
At Lotusphere.
Okay.
And you've had approval from Fox, I assume.
Yes, we do have approval from Fox. That's correct. So, Sean, Carl, what's enough of you, Burgess? Enough. Enough.
I'm keeping quiet. I'm a good boy.
Yeah, you
are. I didn't even realize he was still there.
Yeah, he is. He is.
I mute my microphone like I was told to when I'm not speaking.
That's right. Unlike Carl.
I bet your wife wishes that was possible.
Oh, so, Carl, you...
Bruce, go ahead.
Carl, yes, Carl. Carl, yes. A while...
That wasn't Brian.
That wasn't Brian, no, but...
It sounded like Mr. Burns.
Yeah, it was Mr. Burns. I'm sorry, I can't do
it. Out with it, Bruce. Come on.
I can't do it. So.
What do you want to know?
MVP programs. Microsoft has one. Oracle has one. A whole bunch of companies have one. Lotus does not have one. And you and I and some other people were talking about this. We've been talking about it for a long time. And I guess we're still a little perplexed as to why, you know, Lotus in their little world of partner world and, you know, they haven't adopted something like this. And I wanted to hear what your thoughts on this.
I did write a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago. And I think the interesting thing is, you know, Adam Gartenberg blogged at IBM's now introduced the IBM Data Champion Program, which is basically an MVP program for the information division group or whatever group that is now. So I kind of hope that might be a sign that IBM Lotus figures out that there's an opportunity here to do this. I mean, you know, as you and I were saying, the Microsoft MVP program is one of those things that people are just, you know, they work hard to try and get into it. and it's a very competitive space for people working hard, and that's why they blog and they post tech notes, they post lots of sample code, they help neighbors, all this sort of stuff, which, you know, there's a lot of people in the Lotus community that do that exact same stuff as well, but nobody ever recognizes them for it. I mean, at one point on NotesNet, Lotus used to have the spotlight in the forums once a month where they'd say, oh, we'd like to recognize this person because they've provided great assistance and help, and they'd send you a mug or something. But even that's been removed under IBM. But, you know, I was thinking, it's like, you know, who are the people that we think would be MVPs for Lotus? And I was thinking we could do something, if you wanted, as an experiment. We could have a little idea jam group where people could nominate people in the community they think would be great Lotus community or collaboration champions. And then we could take the top 10 of those, and then we could have an email vote where people could send in an email of the person out of those top 10 that they think should be the MVP.
Yeah, but why continue to do something that IBM Lotus should be doing?
Well, I think this is, you know, anything where you do this stuff, sometimes IBM needs to see it, say, hey, that's a great thing, and then they just copy it anyway. as we know with lots of things, you know, I mean, I know from a lot of personal experience that if you do good stuff, IBM copies it. So it's true for a lot of things that we've seen is IBM doesn't like to take that risk themselves, even though they're an innovator. There's some things that they just don't seem to want to do. And, you know, if you speak to IBMs about this, it's like, well, why doesn't the community do it? And I think really the recognition isn't there if it isn't done by IBM. And I think that's why the MVP program for Microsoft is so successful, is because it's Microsoft that recognizes these people. It's Microsoft that gives those people all the free software. Mm-hmm. It's Microsoft that takes them on their, you know, trips and things like that. So, and I think, you know, the community could definitely recognize people, but it isn't the same as them getting recognition from IBM, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You know, a couple of years ago, Gail and I wanted to start the Lotus MVP thing, and it was just, you know, after a while, it was just no one from IBM. I don't want to diss IBM here. I know that one day we'll have it, but it just seems like, you know, a lot of us have been blogging for like 6 years. We've talked about the MVP program for a long time, and we still don't have anything. Go ahead, Jess.
I wouldn't assume you are going to have it, you know. Just because we all think it's a good idea doesn't mean you're going to get it.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's a lot of things that I think, you know, I think a lot about how IBM, you know, sells social software, yet the way that they operate as a company is still traditional old school IBM.
You know? I think a lot of it might be that back when they were doing the member spotlight on the notes.net forums, you know, I can't remember if it was still Iris Associates at that point, but I'm wondering if how much of it has to do with the fact that maybe IBM, you know, even assigning somebody who really knows who those MVP people might be. I mean, there's just such a wide reach now. How do you'd have to find somebody who's really in touch with everything. I mean, back then when they were doing that member spotlight, I was actually the first person that got that. And Craig Lorden from Notes.net, yeah. He actually sent me a letter and he said, you know, we're starting the new forums. We're doing this member spotlight. He told me about it. We want to start it in place. And he's like, and we'd like it to be you because we peruse the forums a lot and we know how often you're there and how much you help everybody out. I mean, it was really nice. It was really personable. But he was on those forums and he knew everybody. So how much of it is IBM just not knowing?
If that's the reason, then I think IBM's doing a shitty job because it means that their marketing department doesn't understand who their customers are and they're not looking to their community for ideas and needs that those customers have.
I'm not saying that would be it at all. I'm just saying I think it would have to be somebody who did. Like, they would have to add that to their job description to pick them.
I mean,
those people are there, as we know.
They have a division of... They have a division at Microsoft that looks after the MVP program. You know, they spend money on this. They invest on this. They see it as a marketing effort that, you know, helps Microsoft. These people go out. They go to shops. They do demos of Microsoft software. They're not Microsoft employees. They don't get paid by Microsoft. But they do all this stuff. They go to user group meetings. They're all stuff that a lot of people, again, right now in the community are doing. You know, and they're getting recognized by their peers, but they're not getting recognized by the company that makes the most money out of it. It's really to do with resources. You know, IBM, I mean, it's like you said, IBM doesn't sell social software. IBM totally gets social software. They've been using it before social software was even a term that people recognized. You know, IBM has been doing effectively what people now do with the internet internally 30 years ago on the IBM, you know, network system that wasn't open to the world but was open to IBM, as and IBM customers would have money to have a similar network. But IBM's been doing this stuff for years and years. IBM's had email for since before I was born, you know, all this sort of stuff's nothing new to them. And some of it they probably take for granted. But I think this kind of program, it can only happen if they decide that it's an important program. It's the same as the business partner program. You know, a lot of partners don't think that IBM's investing in the partner program the way that, say, Lotus did. And it's not down to people not knowing. It's down to the fact that there isn't a group with budget to do it. It isn't – somebody hasn't put together the business proposal within IBM to justify doing it.
And they don't just not do it for Lotus. They don't do it for any of their platforms, correct?
No, that's what we're saying. They just introduced the IBM Data Champion program now for DB2, Informix, and things like that. So that's why we're thinking it's pretty interesting. It's possible that they're starting to get that these things are of benefit. Mm-hmm. Because they have introduced this IBM Data Champion.
Yeah, but look at like Adam. You mentioned Adam Gartenberg before. You know, he's pounding the pavements. You know, he was a Lotus blogger for a long time. You know, in the same time in his job as a same time product manager, he moved over to DB2, and you see lots of really cool stuff coming out of there. Isn't his role something to do with? Is he an evangelist?
Be like an evangelist, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I know that a lot of us may tune out because he does DB2 and stuff now, but you got to go to his blog and check it out. A lot of really good stuff he has in the.
I don't tune it out. I don't like a lot of the things. I don't follow the technologies that he's talking about, but his enthusiasm it's undeniable, and it's definitely, I think, part of his what makes him successful. And he probably has a lot of readers because of that.
Mm-hmm. Adam, unofficially here from the 1352 report, We bestow upon you the first 1352 report MVP award. There you go.
I thought we had a rule though that said no redheads.
Aren't you a redhead, Carl?
No.
Okay. Sean, what about you? Have you guys seen pictures of Sean when he was younger? I was at his house. You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and his wife made the mistake of ripping out all the old college yearbooks and. I made the mistake of having my iPhone take all these pictures.
Oh, yes. Very big mistake.
So we'll put some in the show notes.
Have you posted them to Facebook yet?
No, they'll go there. Don't worry. But I don't want to have Sean take me down.
I want other people to have pictures up there apart from just me.
I still – when Clever talks about Ed, she goes, the only thing she ever thinks about is when he posted his high school yearbook picture with all that hair he had.
He looked like Alan Lepofsky. Yeah. Just speaking of like people like Adam Gartenberg, you look at what Alan's done, right? Alan's moved over to Social Text, and now he's you know, doing some marketing there, and he's produced some really great videos, and not so much on the blog side. I think he still has this underlying affection for Lotus, which we all have, right? But he's done some really cool stuff with the Social Text products and what they do and so forth. So. We'll give you an award too, Alan, okay?
Yeah, I think the other thing is Alan's starting to feel the frustration that some of us outside the company have that he hadn't necessarily – well, I mean, he realized a lot of it inside, but he hadn't necessarily seen it as much as –
He's starting to understand our pain.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the other day I was asking about how do I start developing for this? Where's the information kind of thing? And then we're like, oh, yeah, you're realizing what we've been saying for a long time. Mm-hmm.
He's on the other side of the firewall now.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got for episode 6 here, gang? Carl, you had I think you had one more thing.
Let's see. Oh, the Symfony Wiki's now up. And obviously you did a video of Symfony running on the Macintosh, which is now in beta.
Yeah. That's a good point. A new version of Symfony came out in what is it called? Version 1.2, I believe.
Think so.
And I've been playing with the Mac beta, right? This is the first official release of the Mac beta on OS 10. And yeah, I did post a little, I don't know, 1 minute video of the application launching and just bringing up the various editors. And, you know, it works. And the more I think about it, and gang, chime in here, You know, in my real day job, we're going through the whole Microsoft Enterprise Agreement renewal stuff. And for the most part, most of the people I work with, you know, use Word and Excel and PowerPoint in very minimalistic ways. You know, they do a lot of number crunching, but it's not heavily integrated with many applications. And then you really take a hard look at something like Symfony or OpenOffice or NeoOffice for the Mac and so forth. And, you know, do you really want to spend and fork over, you know, EA Enterprise Agreement, you know, monies to Microsoft every year? And, you know, Symfony makes more and more sense. And what's your take, Jess?
Well, I see. I kind of agree with you about the whole package. And even with the smaller businesses, that's something that I see. Most of the time, it's just Word, you know, moderate use of Excel, a little bit of PowerPoint, mostly from, you know, salespeople, higher up executives, things like that. The majority of Office licenses for a lot of companies, I think, are probably wasted on people that spend 97% of their time using Microsoft Word.
And not only using nice Microsoft Word, but not using it correctly. Like, they've never actually seen the style editor.
But to give users credit there, the style editor in Word's always been backwards. I mean, it's not a real style editor the way it should be, just so you know.
Oh, I don't disagree, but it's still, you know, there's nothing worse than go down and see everything in normal with different
changed. But you know what?
Which is pretty good. I'm actually on that wiki right now, and one of the entries for Symfony Documents is working with styles in IBM Lotus Symfony Documents.
Carl, what's your take, Carl? You know, outside of the support costs, you know, you don't have to get support for it. How many people really call support for Word and Excel and PowerPoint? I don't think that many. So ruling out the support costs that we talked about in episode, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, I forgot which one it was. What's your take on Symfony, Carl?
I think there's going to be an issue where no matter what IBM says right now, IBM won't do anything for a long period of time if it makes no money. If something's a drain in dollar-wise and there's nothing that's going to be making dollars for it in the future, I think the whole plan of like, well, we do this so that people don't give dollars to Microsoft and we hope the dollars come to us, I think in the long term, that won't survive at IBM. It's like SWAT teams at IBM. They exist for a year, they vanish for 6 months, then they come back for a year, vanish 6 months, because they have no direct revenue themselves, although they're often saving deals. You know, when it gets looked at by the accountants, they look at it and go, what's this huge expense that doesn't make anything?
Well, Carl, put on your thinking,
I think,
beanie.
If I was Microsoft,
there you go.
I think what they will probably do is they'll start competing with it using Microsoft Works. I mean, all the arguments you've given me are like, well, I get Microsoft Works free with a PC. Why am I not using that if I'm a small company?
Yeah, but nobody.
I think the other thing is Symfony's coming as a heavy app at the wrong time. I think the world's moving towards the thinner online apps, and IBM's now going the opposite way to everybody else. I think Microsoft announced recently they're going to have Office for the web. Google obviously has Google Documents, which are on the web. I think SharePoint is gaining traction, and people are going to keep using Office because of the way Office is tied into SharePoint. So then you have the issue of like, well, now we have to upgrade and have updates to Symfony to make sure it works with SharePoint as well as Office works with SharePoint. And I think the people that are working on Symfony, they're all really smart people. And there are a lot of people I know from 10 years ago that all said the desktop business was a waste of space because they were working in the Notes group. And I think they have no idea of the fight they're in for when Microsoft, if they do get impacted by this, will put on. From my just my personal experience in that space.
Mm-hmm. So if you were IBM, I mean, obviously IBM is thinking that Symfony is going to bring them something, right, Carl?
Well, that's what they hope, right? They hope that if you save dollars on Microsoft, you're going to spend the dollars on IBM. But why wouldn't you spend the dollars on something else that's not IT related?
Mm-hmm. You know, Carl, you mentioned stepped around the cloud thing that's going on, right? The Azure stuff and Salesforce.com and Google and so forth. And I think Lotus actually announced, and we didn't cover this, right, the hosted messaging.
Mm-hmm.
What's everyone's take on that? You know, I don't want to sit here and interview you guys, but it's something I feel. Actually, Ed has a blog post on it right now at edbrill.com where he talks about, you know, having, you know, hosted messaging and what's going beyond that, you know, hosted applications and so forth.
I think it's fantastic. The only thing is they need to have a lot more partners doing it. I mean, if I go out looking for Exchange hosting, it doesn't come just from Microsoft. It comes from about 1,000 other partners too. And, you know, you can probably name the Domino hosting partners right now. And I think Ed even said on his blog, I think, that they grumbled about it, which I think tends to indicate that maybe they didn't know it was coming. So they hadn't, IBM hadn't necessarily done great partner relations there as to the fact that, hey, you do hosting. So they're now competing with their partners and they didn't necessarily know that that was coming. And I think there's some grumbling going on in that hosting partner community because they aren't necessarily getting the same pricing deal that IBM is getting for licenses and things.
But what I've heard, Carl, from an unnamed Domino ISP is that they're liking it because their offering's a lot cheaper than IBM's.
Right, but then we also know that some customers go, well, IBM, I should buy from IBM versus risking going with a smaller company. So I personally, though, I think the hosting thing is great. I mean, for me, having a hosted mail server and all that stuff, it's just fantastic. It takes away all that stress and burden of managing it yourself. And I think for most SMBs, the whole idea of having that hosted same time, hosted quicker, all that stuff in a secure hosted environment that's getting backed up, things like that. You know, if the price is right each month, then I think it's a hard thing to justify having all that stuff yourself.
Where do you think the price point is for a per user on that? If you want to do notes with email and applications quicker and same time, how much are you going to be willing to pay per month for that? Because let's say you do it in-house on licensing alone on a yearly basis on a per user, you're probably talking $20 to $30 per month, not including backup costs.
I mean,
so
if it was hosted,
it's going to be even more. So, I mean, just what are you thinking about price-wise?
Well, are you taking into account the electricity? Are you taking into account the staff? Are you taking into account everything apart from just licenses there?
Yeah, everything.
Taking into account my insurance because of the space that's taken up by that server room?
All I'm saying is what are you going to be willing to pay as an SMB to have it hosted someplace else?
Yeah,
it's an SMB.
It's very hard to put dollar amount on.
You know, if I was able to come up with a number like that, then I'd be a pricing guru. But I think the thing is, you know, as with anything, you have to look what's out there. But I think the thing with SMB is it's not just down to the price; it's down to the knowledge and skills required to do it. You know, it's like if you do this stuff yourself, then you need somebody that knows that stuff and does it, and they're spending time doing that versus doing other things that maybe benefit what your core business is.
And when it's out in the cloud and something goes wrong, you're like, who do you turn to?
If you sell lobsters, you don't really care about a mail server and stuff apart from just making sure that it's getting your mail and it works. You know.
Jess, you sell lobsters?
You know about mail.
Not the last time I checked, no.
All right, Sean, you sell lobsters?
No, not recently.
Yeah, Jess is from Rhode Island. They always have this red tide thing that kills everything, so they can't even.
No, but I live in Rhode Island, so I can say. But I know a guy that sells lobsters.
Exactly. That's.
And I do.
Right. So I think though, you know, it's one of those things that even if it isn't a good idea, your competitors are doing it, and you know, today I heard of a second customer of mine. That's a large, you know, we're talking thousands of seats of same time that has moved to Microsoft OCS online hosted by either Microsoft or BT. And that's, you know, so in the last 6 months, I know of about 20,000 seats that have been lost to Microsoft because IBM doesn't have same time hosting.
What about ThinkTime Unite?
What's that?
Yeah, but I wasn't arguing that it wasn't a good idea. I was just wondering what you thought the price point might be.
Oh. I mean, I love the idea of $10-$15 a user a month, you know? And obviously, as you get more users, that price should come down because it should be easier to manage because your hardware costs aren't necessarily increasing because you got a lot of unused resources on that machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you do $10-$15 a month for mail only. Applications and everything else, that's.
But there's other stuff out there. There's intranets from WebEx. There's other services. You know, it's a new market. It's a pricing still being figured out by people and what they can charge. But it's.
I'm just wondering how to make money on that. That's I'm just from an IBM standpoint for doing it that cheap, and then you get
they're making money because it stops. They don't have to make money. Remember, it's just to stop money going to Microsoft. If you apply the same logic of Symfony.
Correct.
Which is it just those people moving to Microsoft, so that's great. Doesn't matter if they don't make any money.
It can also be a matter of companies outgrowing hosted and requiring their own, and then all of a sudden they have a new client. Right? Yeah.
That's Microsoft's idea of acorns become trees, which is that's why they focus so hard on those micro businesses. You know, it's IBM will tell you if they've got, 62,000 customers, as in companies, using Notes. There's 6 million small businesses. So what percentage is that, then, that's using Notes?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, people have options now, which is cool, because they have, you know, you can have your own hardware and have your full-fledged Domino server with your full-fledged IT department, and you can have foundations, and now you can have remote hosting and everything. And so you can start small, you can grow, you can switch around. I mean, I'm just happy people have options, you know?
Yep.
It's that many more people that can start it.
I mean, the thing about hosting is great is for new companies, because you can get your mail, file, and stuff set up in 24 hours, and you have an awareness, you have a presence on the web with email and stuff, and you haven't had to buy hardware, you haven't had to install anything.
Yep. It's or just hire there, an IT person. Yep.
Exactly.
I'm waiting for the first big cloud outage that lasts. You know, Google had the one with the Gmail for, I don't know how long it was, but it was, you know, you couldn't really pick up the phone and call anybody. And, you know, one day when the crap hits the fan big time with a weak outage at one of these cloud companies, whether it's Google, Salesforce, Microsoft, Lotus, whomever, it's going to make some news, and it's just going to put that doubt in someone's head about cloud computing. But hey,
but I mean, that doubt's always going to be there. But then you look at other businesses, Salesforce, WebEx, Same Time Unite, all these things are cloud services that people use and they pay for.
Yeah, no, I agree. But what comes down to, you know, the mission critical stuff, the stuff that's running the business, you know,
the argument is, you know,
and compliance issues.
Google talks about Google Gears. You say, well, if you're using Lotus Notes, you've obviously got your local replicas too, and you can be working even whilst the thing goes down.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Question about the OCS deals. Does OCS have the ability to do the logging of chats like Same Time does?
Yes, actually, they do logging out of the box.
Okay.
So they can actually archive out of the box to SQL Server, mm-hmm. which means you don't need to buy a third party product to do logging.
Do they do integration with like Yahoo and MSN and Google?
Yeah, they do that, but they charge you. I think it's about $13 a user a year. Whereas the Same Time one's free.
Can you log their chats too? I mean, this came up on my blog a couple months ago.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Wow. So you don't need to install like a Same Time gateway box.
Does that go through the server or does that go through the client?
That's a server. It's not a client plugin. It's a server side. They actually had that before IBM had Same Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same Time actually came out probably about 9 to 12 months after Microsoft did it.
Okay.
Because that was actually one of those things that, you know, I upset Adam, I think, because they claimed they were first. No, I upset Mike Rodin because they claimed we're the first to do it. And I'm like, well, what's this thing that Microsoft shipped 9 months ago then?
So you're the one who got rid of Rodin.
I didn't get rid of anybody, no.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're almost an hour into episode 6. We've covered a lot of ground. Some things we've never talked about before, some things we've talked about. And you guys, you know, the last show we threw out some picks for some of the users. It could be anything technology-related, cooking-related, dog-related. So, Carl, let's go with you first. What do you want to throw out there for everyone to check out?
Shouldn't I be prepared for these things?
I'd throw it out there.
Let's see what my dog won't be at Lotusphere. But oh, that's what we didn't talk about, Lotusphere abstracts.
We'll save it for episode 7.
Okay, well, my two sessions got approved. There we go. I'll throw that out there. Now all I've got to do is remember what my abstracts were. I say this every year. Please, 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 Lotus, when you send back the email saying, congratulations, your session's been accepted, also send the abstract text.
That would be nice.
That's funny. Sean, what do you got?
Not a whole lot. Getting ready for Thanksgiving coming up. Thankfully, I don't have to cook at my house this year. And wrestling season starts on the 17th.
Okay. That's really exciting.
You wrestling? What kind of wrestling?
No,
I coach.
Oh,
I coach,
okay.
Rec level. Yep.
So you mean wrestling?
Yes, real stuff.
Okay.
The kids are 5 to 13. So we have lots of kids running around trying to kill themselves on a wrestling
match. I'd like to see that 5 versus the 13-year-old. Mm-hmm.
I got something. For those people who have a Sonos music system, you got to check out the iPhone app for your Sonos system, which allows you to use your iPhone or iPod Touch while sitting in your lazy boy chair to control your Sonos music system around your house.
You pay $1,000 for some music system, and then you got to go buy a $300 telephone to be able to control it.
Exactly. Now, I did have something else.
Get out, Bruce.
I do. I did have something else, too, that it was an article by somebody that talked about how Bechtel is developing their own cloud computing architecture to help fortify their business, you know, not solely relying upon, you know, a third party, but they're building their own kind of cloud system. It's kind of neat, and I'm going to post it in the show notes. Sean, did you have something?
The other thing I want to say is that tomorrow is Veterans Day here in the U.S., and you should make sure that you give thanks to the veterans around you for protecting what you have.
I would agree with that, as yesterday was Remembrance Sunday in the UK.
That's correct. And Jess, what about you?
Let's see. For parting notes, I'm really excited about this. I'm telling everybody, and it's also very, you know, a gratuitous momlets.com, but I'm really excited about it. I just found out that your car actually tells you, some cars, not all, will tell you what side the gas tank is on by the little gas tank indicator.
Really?
They have a little arrow on it. If I go to, and I had to run out and I checked my car and I checked my husband's car. I have a 2002. My husband has a 2004. And if you actually go to the little, the gas gauge icon on the tank, I have an arrow and it's actually pointing to the left. And my husband's car has an arrow and it's right next to the tank and it's pointing to the right. And that's what side the tank is on.
Is this for all cars or just Mini Coopers?
No, he has a Mazda, and like according to a lot of the people that responded in the comments, you know, some do, some don't, but most of them seem to have it. Wow. I just thought that was kind of useful and wanted to share.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because I get forced out of the car since I don't drive, and it's just like
feel around for it. Now, my mom used to have an old Pontiac Bonneville, and that had the gas filler in behind the number plate at the back. And she couldn't even find it. Arrows wouldn't have helped. She walked around the car for hours looking for the gas tank.
Yeah, they have Braille ones too, actually. Oh, come on.
Do they have Braille Speedos?
Yes. All right.
I love the Braille on the drive-up ATMs. That's always the best.
Well, I always wonder about the signs in shops that say guide dogs only, welcome you, or seeing dogs only, because blind people aren't going to see the sign. So they might as well just say no dogs.
All right, Carl, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Carl.
And Jess.
See you next week.
No, come on, Lois.
Oh, no, I can't. I told you the come moment's on, gone. You got to find something else for me to imitate, and then I'll do it.
Everyone in the audience is waiting. Come on.
Alpina.
Goodbye. Come on. Come on.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Bruce.
Well, now you sound like my mother or my grandma. And Sean.
Adios.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to episode 6. We'll catch you for 7 real soon. Yeah. We'll be right back.